We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Obviously, we love KB. He's a great player. He's a great teammate. It's not like, he's just a great part of the team. You know, most of the things that are out there are just rumors and noise, and, a lot of it's just not true. So, but with respect to all player decisions, you know, if anything was going down that path, it would obviously go, that'd be a baseball decision. But we love Chris, and we hope he stays healthy and has a great year.
Alrighty then.
Welcome back, everybody. That was Chicago Cubs owner Tom Ricketts. Talked about a number of things today, and while that was the answer on the Chris Bryant question, he also did point out, at least at one other point, I think maybe at a couple other points, they do have a budget. And so to say that Chris is strictly a baseball decision, I don't know how accurate that is. I don't think that Theo Epstein in a million years would be considering trading Chris Bryant to make his team better if money wasn't an object. So to say that it's strictly a baseball decision, the Cubs have got a high-class problem. They got a bunch of guys who have to get paid in the next couple of years. Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Wilson Contreras. You can't pay them all what they're worth, and that's where a lot of this conversation comes from. And so, Arthur, we are going to welcome in someone who I think knows more about it than anybody in town, probably my favorite baseball writer around, Mark Gonzalez. Gonzo, good enough to join us this evening from Arizona. Also, one of the world's I started to say great Oakland Raiders fan. Are you going to be a Las Vegas Raiders fan, or does it stop at the state line?
No, it goes where they go.
Okay, I knew it would, but I just had to ask the question, Mark.
If you watched him at the Coliseum in the 70s and see that there has been a lack of changes, you know what ownership has gone through.
Well, we are going to get to some of that in a little while. I always love to give our guys, I get Colley in, we talk Steelers, I get Gonzo in, we talk Raiders. But first, we got to get some baseball talk from you, Mark. It's been an interesting first few days in Arizona, first few days with David Ross as the new manager of the Chicago Cubs. So let me start there with you, because a lot of people love to point out that there are some first-time former player, completely inexperienced managers who've had some success. And yet I still find David Ross to be a remarkable leap of faith, particularly when there was Joe Girardi hanging out there, who I know would love to have had the job.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think there was a subtle feeling that this team eventually will be constructed for the long run, not for 2020. Now, things have been put on pause, I guess, because they've essentially returned the same team as last year. But I think much of that was due to the length of the grievance and the time it took to finally reach a decision on Chris Bryant. By then, you know, the market had been gobbled up, at least from a free agent standpoint, with Rendon going to the Angels and Donaldson going to the Twins, and even Todd Frazier for now with the Rangers. And teams, you know, kind of piecemealing their openings at third base. The Nationals, the name one, and the Braves have two young kids. But this whole phenomenon with David, you know, there is a lot of energy, but you could say that for the 29 other camps right now. Certainly this is different because what David has been asked to do is totally different than what Joe did. The message is fine now, but check with back with us on April 15th when we get into the teeth of the regular season, at least 2 weeks in, and you have a better feeling, especially when the games count.
Mark, I know that David Ross was able to address the team really for the first time today. Saw some quotes from Chris Bryant just saying how impressed he was and how it was one of the more impressive speeches that anyone has given within the organization in his time there. The early sense, I saw a note too that one of the big changes from Madden to Rossi has been replacing classic rock with country music. How different is the vibe there? And do the players outside of Chris Bryant seem to be adjusting well?
I think they're adjusting well, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that David is not far removed from the field behind the plate as a catcher. They respected him as a teammate. They know, always knew where they stood because David would take the time to get in somebody's face if he thought something was being executed improperly, or pat him in the back if something he saw was executed properly. So he's wanted him over there in that aspect. The big thing's going to be when sometimes he has to make important decisions and maybe sit a guy who's struggling. But as for now, a lot of guys welcome a fresh voice. That's not that they don't like Joe. They like Joe. They made a point to praise Joe for what he did. He was the right guy at the right time. And I just think, and I'm putting this all on pause because we're only less than a week into spring training, and we only had the first full squad workout today. Right. So I'm going to wait and see how things go and then assess really what's going on.
You know, Mark, I understand. I don't dispute at all that Theo's hands were at least partially tied, if not tied, by the KB grievance. Certainly, beyond that, by needing to get under the luxury tax, we can offer whatever opinions we want as to whether that's reasonable or not. But it's not our decision. Ownership gets to decide what they want to do. So between some contractual restraints and not knowing, you know, whether he was going to have 2 years of a year of control over Chris, I get it, not making any big moves. I even understand wanting to see Tyler Chatwood possibly in the fourth or fifth spot in the rotation because he was better last year than he was, you know, 2 years ago. But what I can't for the life of me understand is it appears that they've done nothing about the leadoff spot. I mean, do they really believe that it's not that or as important? Or is that something that you think may still be coming?
Oh, they do think it's important, but at the same time, there was a feeling, and I know I had this talk with Greg Walker, the hitting coach of the White Sox, when I covered them about a decade ago, that these guys are either acquired or they're born. You don't really develop into a leadoff hitter. Therefore, there's not many out there. And I think the cost of getting one for what they have to give up is just too prohibitive. And at this time, they feel they might be able to get away with rotating it. That spot with various guys. Now, the danger was last year. We saw it. Hayward went in the tank as soon as he went bad leadoff. Schwarber, same thing. He took him out of the leadoff spot. They were fine. They had good years. But this is going to be a big issue, and I'm glad you brought it up because you could see Anthony Rizzo up there at least 25, 30 times next year, the way this team is constructed. And the fact that sometimes he's going to be that guy that's your best option against the Kershaws, the Cardinals rotation or even, the Nationals with Scherzer and Strasburg. So that's where they're at. You know, you could say it's desperation. In some ways you got to put Rizzo up there, but realistically they don't have many choices unless some guys have some breakout years, you know, Ian Happ or even Albert Almora, who's adjusting his swing. So that's where we're at. It doesn't look pretty, but this is what happens when you're tied financially and you don't have a leadoff hitter in your farm system.
We know that Madden was nothing if not a tinkerer with his lineup and with some of the decisions, some quirky decisions at times. It sounds like with the leadoff spot, it might even be by default where Rossi has to kind of follow in that pattern. But do you expect his style to be similar, or do you think he'd be more comfortable kind of locking in on a lineup, or if not locking in, getting something that's close to a more daily regimen for him?
He would prefer a set lineup. Is it going to happen? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. Second base, you got 8,000 candidates there. I think one scenario would be to have Nico Horner and Kipnis get time at that spot. Maybe even David Bodie there if he's a 26th guy. But, you know, Kipnis is 32, he's going to be 33. If he can swing the bat, I can see him playing a lot there, but that remains to be seen. Horner has to play as well. He's a youngster. And then you look at right field, and Jason Hayward had struggles against righties again. And you have Steven Souza. If he's healthy, he'll give you some quality at-bats out there. And you don't drop off too much defensively, even though Souza missed all last season with a leg injury, because the metrics will tell you that he gets phenomenal jumps out there. And then you got center field as well. You don't know who's going to play center field right now. I would think that Haft and Almora are the top two candidates, but both have had their issues at the plate, although Haft played terrific down the stretch. So that's another spot you're going to probably have a little platoon system there. So it'd be kind of tough for David to use a set lineup all the time, although maybe a little more than Joe, where David might say, you know what, I'm going to play these guys a little more and back off on the days off, especially with the schedule, having more off days put in there. So we'll see. But I think it's going to be tough for David to go with a set lineup.
The first significant conversation in a while today with Tom Ricketts. I assume you're in the room, Mark. Anything, I mean, you know, listen to parts of it. We've heard some sound bites. Anything of meaning, really, or just kind of ownership doing the required Q&A to get it out of the way?
He covered all bases. He also spoke well in protecting himself as far as not committing or not admitting certain issues. As far as the payroll was the big one, and the money, and the fact that, you know, talked about the dangers of going over the competitive balance tax threshold for a second straight year and what that would mean in terms of penalties and then carrying on even more. Also mentioned, again, you guys have probably heard it many, many times about just because you spend the most doesn't guarantee a championship. And that's kind of, he won't say directly, he's got a lot of faith in field, but I think I interpret that, well, if you make bad contract decisions, you're going to pay the price. So that one stood out to me as well.
And Mark, what about, you know, the one big contract decision they make last year obviously happens in season. It couldn't really have went any worse, of course, but for a number of reasons. Just your thoughts on Craig Kimbrell's health, on his chances of returning to being the shutdown guy that the Cubs obviously thought they were getting last year.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. Just to take one step back, Tom did say that part of the money that they earmarked to spend this offseason, they spent it last season in getting Kimbrell. Now, I know some of that money came from Ben Zobrist's contract when he took a leave of absence and was on the suspended list. That freed up some money, but they already committed to this year by spending that money last year. As far as Kimbrell bounce back year, everybody seems to think it's doable, with the big thing being that he's got a normal spring training. Last year was so goofy, not just for him, but for Dallas Keuchel on the other side of town, just not having that spring training because of the goofy rules as far as giving up draft picks for free agents that have been tendered, gotten qualifying offers. And I think Kimbrell, I think everybody will admit to some degree he was rushed last year, having, you know, only 3 weeks before he joined the team. And I think having a normal spring training, getting into that routine, I think once the season starts to hit the ground running, now he's still got to be prepared because he's only got two pitches. I think what was alarming last year is right-handers hit 289 against him with five home runs. That just shouldn't happen. But once again, it was just an odd season for him. And I think he knows what he has to correct, and I think he'll be much better than he was last year.
Mark, they've brought in a bunch of once promising arms. We've had their own struggles for whatever reason, some injuries, things like that. You know, you've got, you know, Kimbrell at the back, and then the they're not the Wick brothers, but I'll just call them the Wick brothers because I called the Packer pass rushers the Smith brothers all year long. Other than that, though, they're really counting on some of these guys that most Cubs fans don't know to become a good bullpen. Any of these guys in particular stick out based on what you know about them to be guys we should keep an eye on?
Jeffers is a guy, Jeremy Jeffers. If he can get back to his 2018 All-Star form, it might not be such a bad bullpen. I mean, if you put him back there, I mean, he's got some really sharp stuff. I've seen him on video before, and he's got like a dive-bombing breaking pitch to go along with a 97 mile an hour fastball. He can really be that veteran that helps you kind of take the load off Kimbrell and I wouldn't say forget, but alleviate the loss of Pedro Strop. And then Rowan Wick having a full season under his belt with some powerful stuff. And Joe wasn't afraid to use him in big situations, and guy that big who throws it hard and also has a slow breaking ball that really messes up hitter's timing, he can really be effective. But you still need some guys that are versatile. I think the big thing this year is with the new rule stating that relievers must face three batters or at least finish the inning. That's going to be important to see how this bullpen is sculpted, because very rarely you can have specialists. Now, Kyle Ryan did a good job for most of last year, even though he struggled against righties. That average came down quite a bit, and he's going to do some ground balls. So he might be that guy that is an exception to the rule, but they still need some guys in the middle to really bridge that gap from the starters to Kimbrels and Jeffers and Witt.
Mark, finally, before we let you go, we really appreciate your time. Just one last question from me. I loved what you had to say about the Astros scandal. He certainly didn't pull any punches in just saying that obviously Manfred didn't handle this the right way, that the World Series trophy should have been, pulled. But what do you think about his ability to stack an entire season together now, a full season together now, and kind of pick up where he left with that Cy Young form in the latter portion of last season, and how that can potentially help with some of the questions of volatility in the bullpen?
Yeah, he's really knows himself pretty well, and I think that the staff has given him the freedom to kind of back off when he feels he needs to back off. They managed him pretty well, I would say, after May. Tommy Haughtovee giving him extra time toward the end of June and early July. And I think it paid off coming out of the shoot in the second half, where he really had some prolific strikeout totals. I mean, we haven't seen double-digit strikeout totals in quite a while around here, I guess, since Arrieta. But this guy has really piled up a lot of strikeouts and dominating stuff, which you need, because this rotation right now, there's not many hard throwers, so they got to rely on defense a lot of time. And Darvish was just dominant. And I think that he had some little minor flare-ups with the arm, but at least he knows when to back off, and he's a guy that's capable of giving him close to 200 innings if he's healthy.
So, Mark, not only you, Darvish, but Chris Bryant, they kind of went hard after the Astros. I'm curious for your take, because my initial reaction was one more, ugly story, one more disappointing situation, let's move on. But the more I've thought about it, I think that they should have that title stripped. They should have to give their rings back. They should have that trophy taken away. I mean, this was about as blatant a case of cheating, knowingly cheating, that we've seen in any major sport in quite some time. I'm curious what your take is on that.
Oh, I think it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. I agree with those who say this is worse than steroids. It was really filthy, really dirty. And, the other thing, too, and I pointed out to people that, Jeff Luhnow, who was the general manager of the Astros when this is going on, he once said that, he's got full control of this team, knows what's going on. Now he pleads the ignorance on this stuff. And stepping back even further, remember the Cardinals employee who tried to hack Luhnow's scouting system a few years back, mm-hmm. and was guilty? You gotta really hate somebody to try to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this goes to show, the thickness of the arrogance that hovers over Minute Maid Park and just this whole operation. It's too bad, because they do have some good guys over there. Hector Rondon, solid guy. Joe Smith pitched briefly for the Cubs, stand-up guy. It's too bad that the hitters that are involved really put a permanent stain, not only on the Astros, but baseball.
Well, I mean, the thing that really got me, I was kind of lukewarm on it all, and then I saw that film clip of Altuve after the walk-off homer coming around third base, and you can clearly read his lips telling his teammates, don't rip my jersey off, I've got the wire on. I don't know if that's exactly what he was saying, but something to that effect. I mean, at this point, these guys are knowingly cheating in the game, and beyond that, working to make sure they don't get caught, because they know what's going to happen if they do. And then they get caught, and nothing really happens to them.
Yeah, and then his claim about the tattoo, or his teammates' claim about the ugly tattoo. I mean, come on! I mean, that was such a ludicrous alibi, if you can call it an alibi, for not wanting your jersey torn off. And it's just such weak sauce.
All right, man. Before we let you go, I got to ask you: what about Brady to the Raiders and Carr to the Bears?
I'm not buying Brady to the Raiders. I just think at this point it's too much. I saw him at times look pretty human with the Patriots. It'd be asking too much for him to really navigate this offense to a higher level. Carr to the Bears, I don't know. I wasn't that high on Carr coming out of college. I saw him play his final game. He was hurt a little bit, but he just wasn't a difference maker for me. Good quarterback, but just not a difference maker. And I think that's really separates the great ones from the good ones in the NFL.
So what do? They got to draft one, or are you thinking somebody else? Or where do you think Gruden, you know, Mr. Quarterback Guru himself, where do you think he looks?
I can see him laying low and drafting a guy. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think he can, if the way the draft is scripted and there's a guy that falls, you know, if there's a guy that's really good that gets to, what, the second first-round pick, 18 or whatever it is, mm-hmm. I could see him going for it. Now, that might be a reach to think that any of the top four are still there, but I could see him doing it if he buys in. I trust the scouting department. I think Mayock did a terrific job with this last draft. Terrific job.
Well, he's got two first-rounders to work with. Obviously, one of them the Chicago Bears pick, so they can certainly move around if they want. Mark, I kept you longer than we promised, and I do appreciate your being patient with us. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's early in camp, so enjoy the spring in Arizona, and we will check back as this team starts to develop.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you. That is Mark Gonzalez, one of the best reads in town, guys. Outstanding beat reporter of the Chicago Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. Also kind enough with his time to visit whenever I'm hosting here regularly. And a very knowledgeable Los Angeles / Oakland / soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders fan who does love his Raiders. We've got to take a very quick break here. When we get back, we're going to take your phone calls for the next half hour or so. And I'm curious, guys, we can go back to Bears. We can talk draft, free agency. But I'm becoming more and more aggravated and adamant about this. I really believe the Astros should have that title stripped from them. I think it belongs to the Dodgers at this point. Not that the Dodgers really deserve it. They went out and lost the World Series. But at the end of the day, I don't see how you let the Astros keep it. I just don't understand what Rob Manfred, what Major League Baseball is thinking. Curious for your thoughts. Give us a call, 312-644-6767. Again, 312-644-6767. We'll keep an eye on the text line as well. We're back in just a moment here at The Score.
Jose Altuve was the one guy that didn't use the trash can. A few times that the trash can was banged was without his consent. And he would go inside the clubhouse, inside the dugout to whoever was banging the trash can, and he would get pissed. He would get mad. He would say, I don't want this. I can't hit like this. Don't you do that to me. He played the game clean. The data of the banks that's on Twitter or whatever, it shows it. Altuve played clean the whole year. When you look at Tua's numbers on the road, he hit 400 on the road. He didn't see nobody of the MVP. He earned that MVP.
Come on, man.
Carlos Correa talking about Jose Altuve, saying he earned the MVP, that he was one who was not involved in the cheating. Carlos, I'd love to believe you, except for the film clip that I just mentioned a few minutes ago, where he clearly was trying to avoid getting caught cheating. So, I don't know. I wasn't there, guys, but nobody's disputing what went on, that it was an orchestrated plan to break the rules, that they had an unfair advantage over everybody they played. And it is hard for me to imagine a more really, you know, black and white case of cheating in major professional sports in recent years. So we're going to find out what you guys think about it in just a minute. First up, I do want to tell you, bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Fitz and Northwestern Football returns to Wrigley Field on November 7th as they host Wisconsin. Guarantee a ticket to this matchup with the purchase of season tickets. Buy now at nusports.com. And with that, we are going to get to the phone lines and see what you guys think about it. First up, I believe it says Psycho on my screener. So, Psycho, how you doing?
Hey, Hob. How are you, buddy? Love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Hey, I am so sick, not sick of it, but how the Houston Astros are talking about their arrogance is really, really, I'm fed up. They cheated. Everybody knows it. And you have a commissioner, Rob Manfred, who didn't do his due diligence at all. He investigated 2017. Well, if you're going to do an investigation, you go thoroughly. To 2018, 2019, where they cheated. You saw Altuve hit the 99-mile-an-hour pitch off of Chapman. He pulled it. It was an outside pitch. He pulled it. He knew it was coming. He came around third base. And, of course, you could see the buzzer that he had on his jersey. He said, "Don't touch me. Don't touch me. I want my jersey." Then he comes out with a new shirt on. So he gets rid of the buzzer off of him. Then he showed Josh Reddick in the interview. He has the buzzer underneath his tank top. Here, I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? As far as I'm concerned, Manfred did a horrible job with this inspection. These guys should be suspended. And I know they're protected by the Players Association. But this is what Manfred should have done. He should have suspended, just gave him a $5 million suspension every year for 5 years. He should have taken away their first and second round picks for 5 years. He should have done this as well. He should have taken away their international money for 5 years as well. And he should not, and the Houston Astros should have not allowed to get any free agents for 5 years. And that's their fine. And now you see what it'll be hurting them. And here's another thing. Now, I know they took the team away from Donald Sterling from the Clippers. How about taking the team from this Jim Crane? He knew this cheating was going on, and nothing was done about it. Why can't Major League Baseball say, listen, this is uncalled for. What you guys did was unethical, and we're taking the team away from you. But no, Manfred's not saying anything. And he makes a ruling saying, hey, if anybody's throwing at the Houston Astros this year, they're going to be suspended. Whoa, they cheated, and now they're getting protected? I'm so fed up with this whole thing. I'll just listen to your comments from Hub and what you got to say.
Well, thank you for the call, Psycho. That was anything but psychotic. I thought it was actually measured under the circumstances, and I honestly can't really argue with any of it. It just seems to me, Hub, like anytime anyone... This scandal was bad enough on its own. It could not have stunk worse, or so you didn't think. But then anytime anyone has opened their mouth, from Crane to Correa and the other guys that have spoken on it, all the players showing no contrition whatsoever, and then Manfred, who just is acting as if the public shame that these players have been forced to endure is punishment enough, it's really just it's unfortunate for the game. And with all that being said, here we are talking about the game. You could look at it two ways. This may not be the worst thing for baseball, even as bad of a look as it is for the Astros and for the commissioner of the league.
Yeah, I mean, Psycho, the only thing you didn't do was take away the trophy and the rings. You know, I don't know that a five-year, I mean, basically what you're talking about is like a death sentence in college football. They might as well.
Is that not, SMU, right?
Yeah, well, it's, yeah, SMU, it happened
and more recently.
In a few places. You can't, I mean... You're hurting all 30 teams if you punish Houston that severely, you know, 5 years with no draft picks, no free agents. You really can't do that. They have to be able to remain competitive. I even kind of understand, and I don't even know if it's so much the players' union, as they apparently offered players immunity to get them to tell the truth and to let them uncover everything. So, I mean, to me... They need to have the rings taken away. They need to have the trophy taken away. They did not win a title fairly, and so they should not have credit for the title at all. Anything they do beyond that, I think what they've already done is reasonable. No first and second round picks for the next couple of years. I don't really see anybody going out to throw at them anyway. I think there's other players.
Oh, I disagree.
Well, we'll see. I think players know that when you start throwing baseballs at each other, everybody's going to get hurt. Because if you go out there and throw at the Astros, they're going to come back out to Bobby and throw at you. There's no future in that. And I don't know what you really accomplish. So, you know, but Manfred didn't have to bring it up. What he could have done is just wait until the first time it happens and then come down hard on it. He just made himself look like a bigger ass bag by doing that.
You think there's any chance, Hub, that there's a disconnect on the Astros roster, that some of the pitchers feel like they don't deserve the scorn that this whole team is experiencing? Because that would be human nature, and that would have me wondering if maybe those pitchers aren't going to have those hitters' backs if a beanball, you know, if the beanball war begins.
Well, it was two former Astros pitchers who had originally got the investigation started, right. Although there were suspicions. So I think you could very well be right about that. The other thing, though, that our last caller said, I don't know that anybody has confirmed that the owner did know all along what was going on. I'm not defending him. I don't know what the case is there, but I think it's possible that at least in the beginning he didn't know, and that maybe he didn't even find out until people started looking into it. I don't know. But again, there's more than enough to hang these guys for that I want to start adding things that may not be facts and evidence.
Here's what we know, just real quick, Hub. What we know for sure from the report is that this was a player-driven scandal, and yet I believe, what, three managers' heads have rolled, and mm-hmm. No players are being held accountable. This is a larger problem in society that we're not going to get into. But that, can I just say real quick, that was the one thing, if I've taken any joy from any of this, it's just the way that the Astros and the commissioner have been hammered, and especially the Astros owner, for having no accountability on the issue. I know it doesn't make it any better, but it kind of restored my faith in the rest of humanity that it seems everyone is outraged except for these few individuals involved.
Yeah, and again, I'm not defending anybody. I think the whole thing is outrageous, but the parts that we know we can at least accept and move on. The players were promised immunity if right. they would tell the truth. This happens all the time in all walks of life with right. a lot more heinous acts than this. So we may not like it, but we might not even know. We might still be debating this. We might not have any proof if they hadn't given the players immunity. And that's why they're not being punished. But I can't believe that they promised him they wouldn't be suspended and they promised him they could keep their rings, because if they did that, there was no excuse for it. Now, Scott is out in Winfield, and it sounds like Scott may disagree. So, Scott, what's on your mind?
First of all, great show as usual. I really enjoy listening to you. Number one, Psycho's right. The response was unacceptable and is shocking by Houston, I think, is what's causing the bulk, at least my problems. But I do disagree with you stripping the title. I don't have the stats in front of me, but there's absolutely no question that other teams are cheating. We do not know to what level. And I hate to sound like a conspiracy guy, but it was back in 2017. I just realized it the other day that I'm not a Cub fan. I'll just profess to say that, but I'm not a Cub hater. I was cheering for the Cubs against the Dodgers, and I happened to be watching the Dodgers, and I won't bring up names who was pitching because I don't think that's fair, but I happened to just notice that a guy would pitch and his breaking ball seemed to be better than ever. And he was striking out quite a bit of Cubs, and it was an unusual game for the Cubs. And I happened to watch a pitcher come back to the mound, and he was a righty, he would touch his left forearm, and his hand seemed to stick to the forearm. And I'm like, this is crazy. I can't believe what I just saw. So I have DVR, of course, so I watch the next pitch. He does the same exact thing, his hand sticking to his arms. And I go, I simply can't believe what I saw. So I rewound it, I put it on my phone, and I taped it. And, you know, I didn't make a big deal of it, but, I mean, the point is that there's absolutely no question there was something on his arm, and there's no question his breaking ball was breaking better than ever, and that's the Dodgers versus the Cubs. So I didn't think about it, and I go back and I look at my video still on my phone, and sure enough, it was October 2017. So, I mean, I think I am a conspiracy guy in this end. There's no question in my mind that the reason the players were given immunity is because this opens up a whole can of worms, and if they started to really do an investigation as to try to figure out who else was cheating, it would open up a real black eye on baseball. And I think I'm a huge fan of baseball. I grew up with it, and I know we all did, and I'm a huge sports fan in Chicago lifetime. I just think at the end of the day, they got caught, they got penalized, maybe not enough, but you can't go back and strip them. We don't know who else is cheating, and I really don't want to go down that road, because the game that I grew up with loving, my family loves, I really don't want to go down that. So thanks again, Hub, for allowing me to talk, and it's a great show.
Well, Scott, thank you for the call. I guess my issue is, if you don't go down that road and try and clean it up, you're just waiting for the next incident. I mean, listen, they've been stealing signs in baseball since the game was created.
And doctoring baseballs, pitchers on the mound. That's as old as the game, too.
But this was organized institutional cheating. This was using technology put in to make the game better to cheat. I mean, this is a step above, in my mind anyway, any other cheating that we may be talking about. And that's the issue I have. We're going to get to all your calls. We do have to take a quick break here, but we're going to stay on this topic. There is one thing here, though. A text, and it's coming in on the text zone, which is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Hub, how is MLB hurting all 30 teams if they would penalize the Astros first and second round draft picks for 5 years? Please explain. All right. First of all, what Psycho said is he wants to penalize them first and second round draft picks for 5 years. He wants to not allow them to participate in free agency, and he wants to fine them $5 million a year. When you add all that up, what you're saying is we're not going to allow them to compete for 5 years. And that means that every team in the American League that plays them has an unfair advantage. Teams that play them in their own division have a more unfair advantage than teams from the other two divisions who don't play them as often. The American League immediately gains, the best teams gain a big advantage over the National League in terms of piling up better records for you know, home field advantage in the world. Whatever you want to look at, you can't punish them to the point where they're unable to compete. That's why I don't care about the draft choices or fines. Take away the championship. To me, that is the punishment. We're still talking about the Black Sox 100 years later. You would make them the Black Sox if you strip the championship and forget the rest of it. Now, if a couple, well, you can't suspend them because you gave them immunity. But to me, the only way that you really do put a thumb on this is you say, we're not going to allow you to win. You know, you can't have this championship. And if you do it again, you know, we'll kick you out or something to that effect. So let's get to all your calls in just a moment. You've got the score.
That trophy, which, by the way, is called the Commissioner's Trophy. So for him to devalue it the way he did yesterday is just tells me how out of touch he is with the players in this game. And, you know, at this point, the only thing devaluing that trophy is that it says Commissioner on it.
Justin Turner of the Los Angeles Dodgers letting you know what he thinks of Rob Manfred's decision, and I could not agree with him more. Good for you, young man, and it's not because the Dodgers would be the beneficiary of what should be happening here, I'm quite sure. This segment is brought to you by Kenosha Subaru. And Arthur, before we get back to the phones, we do want to take a moment and offer our best thoughts for Ryan Newman. For those of you who have not heard or seen yet, the Daytona 500 ended in only the third photo finish in race history because of a fiery crash on the final lap with Ryan Blaney and Ryan Newman and Denny Hamlin running 1-2-3, and apparently Blaney and Newman literally racing door to door. Blaney, I assume, accidentally nudged Newman. His car flipped three times and crossed the finish line in flames on its roof, while Hamlin snuck in front of Blaney for a 1/14 of a second victory. Newman had to be removed from the car, was immediately taken to the hospital, and apparently all of the drivers are now waiting for word on Ryan Newman. We do not know. Hopefully it may not be serious. We don't know. But there has been no report yet that we can find. And it may be a video you do not want to watch because it is pretty horrific. So the Daytona 500, after being delayed by rain yesterday, two red flags today, two overtimes, and finishes with a rather spectacular scene. Joe Gibbs' cars finish 1-2-3 in the Daytona 500. Let's get back to the phone lines. And next up, it is Quinn's turn. Quinn, thank you for calling. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's up?
I just want to talk about, I remember 2018 when the Boston Red Sox came out of nowhere and became the best hitting team of that year. It makes a lot of sense that they cheated. And I know there's no official report yet and everything. I don't know how long they're taking with that investigation. But another point I want to make is what happened to you, Darvish, when with Gurriel, just the arrogance of him, mocking him, and the racist actions he took. I think the only justice, you know, jokingly, would be Darvish gets to beam him one, and everyone, you know, that should be punishment enough. But I'll hang up, and thank you for your time.
You know, Quinn, I understand your concern, you know, about the Red Sox. Prior caller talking about some sign stealing in Wrigley Field. Yu Darvish's problem was he was tipping his pitches, so he's got nobody to blame but himself for that one.
Or so he thought.
Well, I mean, considering
that's now a little bit up for debate, isn't it?
Considering he had a 1.79 postseason ERA until those last two games, he went to 7.3. Something was going on. But at any rate, I don't mean to laugh about any of this. I think to bring up the other cheating really takes the eye off the ball, so to speak. No pun intended, guys. I mean, this is, again, organized institutional cheating overseen by management with the entire team participating. I'm not aware of anything like this in professional sports. And, you know, people, the haters can go after, you know, the Patriots and the NFL, whatever you want to make of it. It was, you know, Belichick with his video gate. It wasn't the whole organization, the whole team. And by the way, it probably gave no edge to the, I mean, this is something, when I first heard about this, my reaction, Arthur, was, I don't understand with the split second timing it takes at the plate. Even if you found out with a second or 2 seconds what pitch was coming, I'm not sure how well you could take advantage of it. But what we've now understood is that these hitters were getting a full 2-3 seconds warning as to what was coming, plenty of time to prepare themselves for it. And it you know, maybe Houston would have won without cheating. We'll never know,
right?
Because they cheated horribly. And I just don't understand what Manfred is thinking by saying that they can be champions anyway.
Yeah, it's absurd. We couldn't be more in agreement on that. And Hub, I think when you listen to more of the other big hitters in baseball and hear just how disgusted they are. Chris Bryant's a great example, and there's not a more stand-up guy here in town and just the way he spoke of it. But the list goes on, and you just can kind of seemingly you get a sense from their reactions just what an edge this is. I hope it was on these airwaves. I know Mark Grace just recently was asked what would happen if he were benefiting from similar circumstances. And I think he said he would have hit in the 400s, upper 400s or mid 400s, whatever it was. Obviously, he was already a good hitter to begin with. But I just it tips the scale so much. And it was just so advanced in the level to which it went is so far above and beyond. And the punishment was just almost it just didn't come close. And the explanation really highlighted that, made it appear that much worse.
And every time that Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, or any member of the Houston Astros opens their mouth, they just keep making it worse. So,
Bob, I thought that Roger Goodell was the biggest clown commissioner in professional sports, and now I'm having real doubts about that.
I don't think Roger Goodell is a clown. I think Roger Goodell is just arrogant. I think he just believes that he can do what he wants and there's no consequences, and based on their revenue and their TV ratings, he may be right. I mean, in this case, I got a hunch, you know, based on the way that Goodell has come down on the Patriots a couple times, because he and Robert Kraft were actually very close at one time, I think there's a better chance that Goodell would have gotten this right. Let's get one more call in before I have to break again. Greg is out in Tinley Park. Let's see if Greg agrees with us or maybe disagrees. Greg, what do you think?
Totally, totally agree with you. I mean, and a couple of callers ago said, I love baseball too, but they investigated the PED stuff, and guys like Sosa and Bonds got all exposed, and I think they should be exposed for this. You got guys back in the day who really, really didn't do nothing, like a Jim Thorpe, like a Shoeless Joe Jackson, and look at the wrath they've suffered. These guys did way more and need to suffer for it.
Greg, thank you for the call. We are absolutely...
Hey, Hump,
yeah.
One more thing. By the way, Woodstock wasn't in 68, it was 69.
You
said 68 earlier.
That's because in 68 I was busy getting arrested in Grant Park, so I guess I got my year wrong. But thank you, Greg. I do appreciate it. I know that was the year I got busted in Grant Park. So, of course, that was the Democratic National Convention. Nobody wants to hear about that. We'll save that for the 9 o'clock hour is where we do that stuff, if anybody is interested. But you got to call and ask, because I'm not going. I don't think Arthur's ever heard the story, so I'm not going into that.
I'm
going
to ask. Don't worry. Callers, okay. Feel free, but we're going to ask.
We'll get back to that in an hour or so at what he'll really be impressed by, as it was his grandfather who encouraged me to go. So anyway, guys, we've got to take a quick break here. We're going to have plenty of time for calls. We got 2 hours left. He's Arthur Arkush. I'm Hub. We're with you until 10 o'clock tonight. We're going to hand it off to CBS Sports Radio for a couple hours with Maggie. Not Maggie, but Julie getting a break tonight. And then the Grobber will be in for his normal shift at midnight. We do have Scott Merkins coming up. We talked a lot of Cubs in the top half of this hour. We're going to talk some White Sox in the next half with Scott Merkins. That's next right here on The Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.